This is Ayani.
And this is Corinne.
And you're listening to Sex, Love, Literature, a pop culture podcast where we take a semi-scholarly look at why
and how
the sex stuff in media matters.
Welcome to our mini-series on divorce comedies. Over the next four-ish episodes, we're exploring the genre that caught us off guard with how much it makes us laugh, cry, and, of course, yell, divorce!
In this introductory episode, rather than focus on any one show, we're getting into the defining features of divorce comedies, why we wanted to talk about them in the first place, and whether or not they can be counted as rom-coms.
Spoiler. No, they can't.
Yes, they can.
If you have a divorce comedy that you love or loathe, let us know on Instagram or Threads at SexLoveLit and on Tumblr at SexLoveLitPodcast.
Don't forget to subscribe to and rate our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any of your other favorite podcast platforms.
And if you have a moment, leave us a review. It can really help convince people to check out the show.
All right, let's get divorced. Hello, hello, SLL listeners. Welcome to another episode of your favoritest sex love literature. We are so excited, as always, to have you for another episode. And this one's going to be kind of a fun situation because this episode is a bit of an opener for a mini-series that we're doing. Is it
fair to call it a mini-series? I think it's our first intentional mini-series because most of the time...
No, we did the keywords miniseries.
Oh,
which was
we did
on purpose.
The keywords miniseries. But most of our miniseries are unintentional because we start recording and then it goes for too long. But here we planned on going too long.
I was gonna say, looking at you, lost you forever. That turned into three episodes,
and we're still waiting for the second season / second half of that show to come out.
So yeah, this is an intentional miniseries that will also. Lost You Forever Season 2 will likely be an unintentional miniseries. We'll see what happens. But we're excited for this one. We've been plotting doing a divorce comedies miniseries for a little while now because we'd watch too many shows and text each other in all caps, divorce, divorce, throughout like quite a few shows, actually.
Yeah.
So this episode and the subsequent episodes has been a long time coming. And I know I'm excited to talk about it. And I think you are too, Corinne.
I am. I like divorce.
I'm sorry. That's really funny. Yeah, Andrew was like talking mess. He was like, you're going to talk about divorce comedy. Divorce, your favorite subject. And I'm like, I would say it's my favorite subject, but you know. But before we dive into our, I guess, our divorce breakdown.
Okay.
I don't know. Our divorce conversation. That's a little better. Our divorce conversation.
We're having a breakdown about divorce.
No, we are breaking down divorce. It's not, it's not quite the same thing.
We're not the ones breaking down here.
No. We can, well, we are not breaking down. It made us cry a couple times. Some of the shows did, but no, we're not having a breakdown. Why don't we... run right into What's Sparking Joy. Corinne, what is it? What is What's Sparking Joy?
So What's Sparking Joy is when we talk about something we are currently watching, reading, or listening to in pop culture that is sparking joy for us. So, Ayani, what is sparking joy?
Well, this is going to be perhaps slightly different than anything I've talked about before, but it's WrestleMania weekend, and I don't know if I've ever talked about the fact that I occasionally watch professional wrestling on the podcast, but I do. This is Andrew's fault. Andrew is my spouse and friend of the show, because maybe like somewhere between 8 and 10 years ago, he started to watch wrestling again, and I was like, what is all of this flipping in the tight pants? And so now I watch wrestling on occasion, not like the weekly shows, but I like watching the big shows. And it's kind of like the biggest show of them all this weekend, which is really exciting. So WrestleMania is kind of split into two parts now, thanks to the pandemic, because the pandemic changed everything. So last night was part one, and tonight is part two, and there's going to be about, I think, 4 or 5 big matches. But last night was so fun. I did a lot of yelling, and we had one friend on Discord and another friend we were texting in a group chat. So, like, it kind of was recreating some of the WrestleMania watch parties we used to have when we lived closer to a lot of our friends. So talking to my friends.
You live in the tri-state area, acting like you don't live near a bunch of people.
No. I said my friends. I have a good contingent here, but like when you live in other places, your friends are just far away now.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? You're not here. I'm not going to pout about that. You know. So anyhow, what's sparking joy for me is WrestleMania. It's a lot of fun. And talking to my friends about wrestling while watching wrestling. It's kind of meta, but it brings me joy. So Corinne, what is sparking joy for you?
So I recently, surprise, surprise, read a book.
Oh, look at you reading books.
Very, very occasionally. I read them very quickly and then don't read again for 2 months. But the last time that happened, I read Nettle and Bone by Ursula Vernon. It is a fairy tale-esque fantasy novel. It's not retelling any particular fairy tale, but it very much has the vibe of like going on a sort of impossible quest, having like figure. So it's about this royal family in a very small state that they're in like a harbor. I don't know. There are political considerations. The main character is the third princess, and her first sister is sent to marry a neighboring prince and dies under suspicious circumstances and is sent back.
No.
And then her second sister is sent to marry the same guy because they need the alliance. And then the third sister is sent to a convent because she cannot be having any kids out here until her second sister has children. So there's a whole thing, but basically we find out that there are problems with the prince and he can't be held to account because he is in a position of too much power. So Mara, the third princess, is like, well, guess we have to kill him. So
I mean, sure, why not?
So she goes on a quest to find a dust witch, who is a witch who lives by a graveyard, to help her figure out how to kill this guy. And it's really nice.
So I have to ask, is the Dust Witch, like, the second female lead? Is there romance here?
There is romance, but not with the Dust Witch. The Dust Witch is quite old, but the Dust Witch does have a pet chicken with a demon in it.
Oh, so she's living my best life, is what I'm hearing.
Yes, the Dust Witch is really an ideal character.
Now I know what I want to be when I grow up. Got it.
But I think I might have like, we'll see. But I think I have a paper spinning around in the back of my head about the difficulties of holding men to account when they are in positions of too much power. And specifically holding men to account for their abuse of women. So it's very much a product of those questions sort of in the air since the Me Too movement went viral in 2017. So been thinking about that. But I really, really enjoyed Nettle and Bone. It was, despite the grimness of the circumstances, it has a lot of humor in it. Like when Mara asks the Dust Witch why there's a demon in the chicken, the answer is, or how a demon got into the chicken. The Dust Witch's response is, oh, the usual way. I couldn't put it in a rooster because then it would turn into a basilisk.
Sure, okay.
With no further elucidation about what the usual way is.
You don't need to know. It's for a need-to-know basis. If you don't know how to put a demon in a chicken, then that's it.
Then you
that's
don't need to know.
Yep. Well, awesome. I'll add that to my list of things since I figured out how to read again, you know?
I'm jealous. It still only comes in spurts for me.
I mean, that's fair. I think my spurts are just a little bit longer. Wow. I'm gonna edit that out because that's weird. So that was actually a pretty quick round of what's sparking joy. Probably because we did not talk about any C dramas, so we were able to move through it quite quickly.
I could have, but I decided to hold it inside.
Well, you got a comment about a chicken in there somewhere.
I did. So
for those, what is the name of it? Because I was just going to call it the Chicken C Drama, and that's not what it's called.
The Legend of Shenli. I'll probably go on a little bit of length about that for our next What's Sparking Joy. So we're going to put a pin in that.
All right. Look forward to it. So returning to divorce comedies, as we kind of said in the opening, this is something that's been bubbling around in our brain for a little bit of time. And one, of course, we're going to give a little bit of like context about what we mean when we say divorce comedies, because I don't think, and I didn't do a lot of research on this, but I don't think divorce comedy is like a genre you're going to see when you are looking through Netflix or something, right?
I don't think I have. So to give you some context, this episode, we're not talking about any particular property. Instead, we're talking about divorce comedies like as a genre, asking, is it a genre at all? Yeah. What are its defining features to us? Why do we find it so interesting? Those sort of things. But when we were first thinking about doing this as a miniseries, Ayani was like, well, Corinne, we can't just talk about East Asian media. Look for something Western. And I did. And I did not find anything quite equivalent that I wanted to watch anyway to what I was thinking of, like, the divorce comedy show in East Asian dramas.
Yeah, that's right. We did kind of run through some ideas, right? There were a couple films that we talked about maybe that might fit. And I actually just thought of one that we didn't talk about, but I'll throw that in a little bit later when we kind of think about edge cases about what makes a divorce comedy or not, right? So I guess rewinding just a little bit, like, we stumbled across this kind of, let's call it just a genre for the sake of our conversation right now, even if we want to kind of think more about how we're using that term in a little bit. But we kind of stumbled across this because we watched a series of shows within like a couple of month span last year that all centered around divorce in a way that we found was particularly interesting, right? So to kind of ask this question of me and of you, like, what about those shows made us want to talk about divorce comedies?
So there are two main things that I find very interesting. One is that divorce isn't funny. It shouldn't be funny. But there were all these shows that were divorce comedies. Yeah. They weren't melodramas. They weren't like saccharine sweet. They weren't like tragedies. They were comedies.
Yep.
And that kind of seemed to me like a contradiction in terms.
Yeah, it's interesting because in a sense, like, black comedy is a thing, right? Or dark comedy is a thing. So it's not that you can't have funny shows, funny statements about something that's, you know, heavy or something that often we don't take lightly. But a lot of these comedies, like, the comedy was effervescent.
They aren't bleak.
Yeah, they're not bleak. They're not like heavy, heavy jokes. It's not like I laughed to stop from crying. Like, they're funny.
They're so legitimate comedy.
Yeah, so that was something that while we were screaming divorce, we were also like cracking up. And it was, as you were saying, kind of like an interesting juxtaposition of feelings and emotions and reactions.
Yeah. And so then the second thing for me about why I found them so interesting is the often bittersweetness of the ending. Because in a lot of these setups, and we'll talk a little bit more, especially as we get into our deep dive episodes later on, about, like, does the couple have to end up divorced at the end of the show? Like, do they have to end up separated at the end of the show for it to be a divorce comedy? But particularly for some of the ones I was watching, I would start out the show fully convinced that these people hated each other. They were the worst things in the world for each other. They desperately needed to be divorced.
Yep.
And then by the end, if they did get divorced or separated, I was very sad about it because I didn't want them to be divorced anymore.
Yeah.
So that sort of that development and these endings of something that was a comedy that I thought going in was going to be a rom-com maybe didn't end up being that way was really interesting to me.
Yeah, the trajectory of these shows, right, in a way was something that I don't feel like I could predict. And they kind of kept me on the ride all the way through. But it was a very different kind of feeling than, like, when you're watching a rom-com, right, and you're rooting for the two to be together. Oftentimes from the start, it's kind of like, oh, these two should definitely be apart. And then the show plays with your expectations of what a romance story is supposed to be doing and how it's supposed to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been using the term divorce comedy a lot. So maybe it'd be helpful to give a little bit of a definition about what we mean when we're saying that. How would we define a divorce comedy? What makes something a divorce comedy? What are its defining features? What are some of the things that jump to mind for you with that?
So I think the first thing is that divorce needs to be a core focus of the show. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's not just, like, a breakup, but, like, divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Which means the couple needs to either be married or have been married at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, but I will say I think one of the key things about the idea of divorce as, like, the core of the show, it can't just be that one of the characters got divorced in the past and then the story doesn't really think about that anymore, right?
Mm-hmm. It's about the people who were married or are married.
Right. So I think we can, like, throw some of our edge cases in while we're talking about the things that make it, right? Yeah. So an example that comes to mind for me that we talked about before we started recording was Romance is a Bonus Book, which was an excellent K-drama that came out, I want to say, what, maybe 2020?
2019 or 2020,
2019? Yeah. And the main female lead in that was divorced, but she was divorced before the show began, and the show did not focus on her divorce. It focused on these new romances that she was building with her childhood friend and with Mr. Umbrella, who now everybody knows and loves because he was in Squid Game and a variety of other things. So I wouldn't call that a divorce comedy, even if it was funny and even though it focused on a woman who was divorced, because the divorce was not, like, a major part of what the show was thinking through or what the show was about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one, so this is an American show that I think I could perhaps be convinced that the first season is a divorce comedy, and that's the show, the Netflix show Grace and Frankie. And so for people unfamiliar, that show is about...
Yeah, I don't know that show, so you can go ahead.
Yeah, so it's about two elderly couples, like, retired at, like, you know, sort of the end of their lives, and their husbands sit them down and are like, well, we need to get divorced because we are in love with each other and need to get gay married.
Oh.
So the first season is kind of about... It is about those divorces, but the show ends up being much more about the relationship between Grace and Frankie, the two women, who end up living together in, like, their beach house that their husbands had bought together because their families needed to spend so much time. Anyway, they've been having an affair for, like, 40 years or something.
Jesus.
So, and that is certainly a comedy, but it just ends up being much more about friendship than it is about divorce to me.
Huh. I wonder... And I don't think this is a question that we can answer, but maybe that's – I don't think this is a defining factor of divorce comedies, but kind of like if you have a tight 12 or 16 episodes and you're telling a story across that versus something like Grace and Frankie, which is multiple seasons, right? How like the first season, if that's all the show was about, it might have been a divorce comedy. But because it's now extending beyond that divorce and the characters are growing and changing and all that kind of stuff – the dynamic shift is focused.
I think the show model affects the, like, is maybe part of the reason why we don't have these sort of extended meditations on divorce in American television, because that can't sustain a show for two or three or four seasons. And a lot of East Asian shows, like K-dramas in particular, are designed to be one season.
The media, or the piece of media that jumped to mind for me, actually, while we were talking earlier, was Crazy Stupid Love. And because Steve Carell is getting divorced in that, right? Aren't they getting separated?
Yeah, so I think Crazy Stupid Love is maybe, could potentially count, because Steve Carell's character and his, who plays his wife, do you remember?
Google knows.
Because they get separated at the beginning and she tells him she wants a divorce because she's been having an affair with David Lindhagen.
Yeah. Julianne Moore.
Julianne Moore. I knew it was someone I should know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I could see that as potentially in the category of divorce comedy, but because it's so brief because it's a film, it doesn't have the same sort of... I don't think I ever quite yearned for them to get back together.
Okay, well, let's come to that actually then as like a defining feature of divorce comedy, right? So I think with a lot of the ones that we're going to talk about, or maybe with all of the ones we talk about, we started with this firm belief that the couple should be divorced. Mm-hmm. And then the story kind of pushes us through twists and turns where sometimes we begin to doubt whether that divorce should happen or not. And so what you're saying is Crazy Stupid Love doesn't give you enough time to doubt? Question mark?
Maybe. So I also, having said that, also kind of want to take it back since one of the shows we're looking at, so the first show we're going to look at in our next episode is the K-drama Dr. Cha, and I never for one second thought those people should stay together.
Oh, no, no, no. I said sometimes.
So that's perhaps an unfair criteria for me to set.
Mm.
But so I still think – so, okay, here's another question.
Sure.
Can a divorce comedy also be a romantic comedy, or are those distinct categories? Because I would certainly consider Crazy Stupid Love to be a rom-com, which maybe is why I'm hesitating to allow it to be a divorce comedy.
You know, I don't think they have to be separate. I think romantic comedy or rom-com can be like a bigger box, and that a divorce comedy could kind of fit under that box. Because I don't want to spoil all the things we're going to talk about in later episodes, but another series that we're going to be talking about is Let's Get Divorced. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of like romance tropes that get used in that are very similar to what like rom-coms do, right? And I think maybe something we should think about when we talk about that show is how rom-com tropes are used to perhaps get us to think about whether we really want this couple to get divorced or not.
Mm-hmm. So I both agree with you and disagree with you because I think my expectation, if you tell me I'm watching a romantic comedy, is they will be together at the end.
That's interesting. So you don't think a subgenre can come with its own set of expectations? Because that's kind of what I feel. Like, if I'm watching a divorce comedy, I will expect them to make use of some rom-com tropes. But
I think divorce comedies can use rom-com tropes, but I think like a defining feature of a rom-com, sort of the way romance as a genre has to have a happily ever after, at least according to romance authors, which has its own complications. Yeah. I think a romantic comedy they have to be together at the end.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if I require that. I think I could watch a romantic comedy that was about the romance and was about the ride of this romance, but then the people go their separate ways at the end. I
don't think that's a rom-com anymore.
Ooh, that's not what we're talking about.
I don't think I'd be disappointed, but I don't think it's a rom-com.
But why not? If the focus is on romance and it's a comedy and they just don't get together at the end, how does that... We're getting off here, but I think if the focus is on a romance and I'm laughing all the way through their romance and at the end they're like, you know, 5 years later and they're both married to other people, like I don't see
then
why
that's
that
a that's a comedy with some romance in it. That's
but
not
if the
a
romance
comedy.
But if the romance is the focus of the story, I don't think you can pull it out. If the focus is the romance and the romance just doesn't work out, that doesn't mean that it wasn't a story about the romance anymore.
Especially
if it doesn't end in tragedy. But like, nobody dies.
I think I would feel lied to if something is marketed to me as a romantic comedy and they're not in a relationship at the end.
500 Days of Summer is a romantic comedy. They don't end up together at the end.
Yeah, and they also shouldn't, so that's correct. But also, like...
But it's a romantic comedy. It's all about their romance and they're better people at the end of it. Also, I'm really going to have to turn down the volume of these because our mics are probably, like, peaking right now.
I mean, like, I both agree with you, but also firmly believe that they have to be together at the end.
I love that you're like, you're right, but also no.
I can hold two things in my head at once. I know. I can walk and chew gum at the same time.
You're a complicated woman. I understand. We contain multitudes, Corinne.
Okay, I do think divorce comedies use a lot of rom-com tropes, though.
That was a great aside, however. Like, I think that was excellent. And this is why our podcast is not an article, it's a vibe, because sometimes you have to digress and go over here, and that would have been cut out if this was an article. So.
Mm-hmm. That would have been put in the footnotes.
You know, you're right, and I do love a good footnote, so. It would have been like half a page, but it would have been a great footnote. I think that kind of opens up that we don't have an answer necessarily to whether mm-hmm. divorce comedy can be a rom-com or is a rom-com or what have you. But I do think drawing the connection between them is really important, especially as we kind of start to pull apart mm-hmm. the shows and how they work and function. And to throw another, I'm just like spoiling all the ones we're going to talk about, but I think Strangers Again is a really good mm-hmm. one to think about how they're using rom-com tropes in a divorce comedy to kind of play with what we think should be happening mm-hmm. and how that makes us feel at the end of the show when things go the way that they go.
Yeah, so that's the one, and I don't want to give away the game for when we record that episode, but that is actually the first show that I watched where I was like, are divorce comedies a thing? Because I mm-hmm. remember starting that one and being like, oh, it's going to be a goofy rom-com with like a lot of mess. Because it's about two divorce lawyers who are divorced and end up working at the same firm. And like mm-hmm. the trailers are very goofy for it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then I ended up feeling like a lot of feelings. And yeah. then also like that was when I was particularly like, I desperately want these people to get back together, but also I don't know if they should, and I'm gonna be upset if they're apart at the end.
Yeah. And I'll put a pin in that, because we can definitely kind of think about that. And I'll say this super early, because I'm assuming you're gonna listen to this before you listen to the other episodes, but there will be spoilers.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think it's possible for us to have a conversation about any of these shows without really like ripping the band-aid off and talking about what is happening within them. Mm-hmm. One thing I want to mention before we kind of continue poking at like what we're thinking about with these shows, but also parsing through what we think makes a divorce comedy, like we're not really splitting hairs between like dramedies or comedy dramas, right? Mm-hmm. And feel free to disagree with me here, but like all the shows we're talking about very much so use comedy in mm-hmm. their storytelling, but that doesn't mean that there aren't dramatic moments, right? I think yeah. all of them made me cry at least once, so it's not that they're just like slapstick funny the entire way through, but I think calling them divorce comedies, like, you know, is a good umbrella mm-hmm. rather than like divorce dramedies or divorce comedy dramas. I don't know, it gets a little unnecessary, I think. And as you yeah. were saying, the kind of comedy that they're using is important mm-hmm. in how we're thinking about these stories.
Yeah, so like another sort of edge case here that we're not considering a divorce comedy, in part mm-hmm. because of the genre, is the Korean drama Mine, which mm-hmm. is very much mm-hmm. a makdang drama. So a very sort of like soapy telenovela, over-the-top mm-hmm. sort of drama that is much more about melodrama than it is about comedy. And it does have comedic moments, but the focus right. is more on the drama than the comedy.
Mm-hmm. Man, so before we started recording, Corinne reminded me that show existed, and then we just kind of for like 5 minutes were talking about how great it was and remembering mm-hmm. all of the nonsense that happened.
Yeah.
So if you haven't watched Mine, it's on Netflix, right?
Yeah, Mine is a Netflix drama.
Yeah, you should go watch Mine. It's a mess, but it's like so good.
And it has like our favorite lesbian that we talk about all the time. Our favorite lesbian character
in K-dramas. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, gotta be a little more specific than just like our favorite lesbian. But no, yeah, I love her. She's amazing and her clothes are amazing, and I follow the actress on Instagram, so like.
And also yes. she like is married to a man and stays married to a man, and like, anyway, there are a lot of people who should get divorced in that drama and
yeah.
don't. Also, there's some murder.
Yeah. And tragedy. Like, there's a lot happening. And nuns. There's a lot happening.
Yeah. It's also a Chaebol drama. So it's mm-hmm. dealing with, like, the absurd lives of rich people. Or mm-hmm. the absurd imagined lives of rich people, at least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, also not what we're talking about, but you should watch mine. I think actually kind of running with that, thinking about the fact that mine is like a melodrama, right? Mm-hmm. When we're talking about the comedies in these shows that we're going to be talking about, where is the comedy coming from, right? If it's not, if comedy is an important part of the story, like where are we finding that, that we're starting to laugh and we're cracking up? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to stay away from specific examples, but like Toot just popped into my head.
So I think a big part of it actually is the skill and the casting of the two leads, because I think they are often primarily comedic actors or have very strong comedic chops.
The
way they play things in the hands of another actor could be drama, but because of the way they're played, they become comedy.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right, because in two of these shows, the scumbag husband is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. It's absolute garbage trash, but so funny.
So funny. And that's, I think, part of course, how the role is written, but how it's acted. Mm-hmm. And if they weren't played so funny, it wouldn't, I think I'd just be mad the whole time. Like, I couldn't be laughing. But there are things that happen that, like, I would bust out cracking up because I was like, this is such a fucking mess. Mm-hmm. So, no, I think that's a great point. So I think we've got the actors are doing great work. But then I think some of the situations that the characters find themselves in, there's a lot of good, like, situational comedy that happens where the characters are even surprised at the way that they're behaving. Or when characters who we thought were on complete opposite ends of the spectrum start to mirror each other in interesting kind of ways. It's so hard not to talk about the examples. I'm trying not to spoil, but like I'm getting really excited to talk about these shows.
Well, it almost becomes at some point a comedy of errors or like a comedy of the absurd. Because like the situation is just like, well, this is so absurd that it's funny.
Yep.
Like if it was happening bananas to me, I would be like upset, but also like this is very funny.
It helps to know that these are not real people that are going through this, right? I could laugh at this from afar, but if it was you, I would be like, oh no, Corinne, divorce that man. Like, don't stop it, go. Like, just be done with it. Oh, man. Oh, this is going to be so fun. Like, I know I've said this 15 times, but like, we've been waiting to have these conversations, and I can just kind of tell by the energy that we're recording right now that this is, like, I'm, like, rubbing my hands together, like that meme of the man in the yellow suit behind the tree, like, ready.
Okay, so to set up the questions we'll be answering in our upcoming episodes, we're not going to do full deep dives on these shows, but we are going to focus specifically on the examples we have at hand. There are some sort of key questions that we're going to ask of each show. So one of the questions is that we're going to ask is what happens to the main couple and do they have to be separated at the end, or do we want them to be separated at the end? And that's sort of one of the differing things in the dramas we're looking at, is how much we wanted them to get back together, if we ever did, and how much we remain convinced that they should be divorced at the end.
Yeah. That's a great question, because it's different. We'll also be thinking more specifically about how the comedy works and where the comedy comes from. I know we did a little bit of a gloss here because it felt germane to the conversation, but in looking at these specific shows, they're all doing something a little bit different, right? So thinking about specifically how the actors in the shows are doing what they do, right? But also the kind of situations that the particular show is putting them in that, you know, becomes absurd, to use your word.
And then sort of the last big focus, and I'm sure other things will come up, but the other thing we'll be addressing is how much or how divorce comedies employ rom-com tropes, and in particular how they converge with or diverge from second chance romance as a trope.
So what we have planned for right now is we're going to have mini episodes on Dr. Cha, which is on Netflix, Strangers Again, which is on Viki, and Let's Get Divorced, which is on Netflix. So Dr. Cha and Strangers Again are both Korean television. Let's Get Divorced is a Japanese show. So I think this will be the second Japanese drama that we're talking about on the podcast after Rinko-san Wants to Try. So as always, we'll be approaching these shows as Americans, right? We are taking them from our personal context. But as always, you know, I think that's interesting because they are shows that are being viewed in a transnational context. So we'll be bringing kind of our understandings and our American opinions on divorce to the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think there's a lot of interesting and fun things for us to talk about. So if you want to do your SLL homework, Dr. Cha, Strangers Again, and Let's Get Divorced are the ones you should look at. I think Let's Get Divorced is only like 8 episodes. It's not even that long. So
yeah, Let's Get Divorced is a pretty short show. And they are all very charming.
Yeah.
Like, I originally, like, hesitated to start some of these because I was like, I don't know, it's about divorce, I'm gonna be sad, divorce is sad. And then I watched them and they were so funny and charming.
Yeah, they're delightful shows. Like, I wasn't sure how I was gonna feel about Strangers Again, for example. Mm-hmm. That was the last one I watched. But, like, I burned through it. There was one episode where I stopped because I was like, ooh, that's a lot. But it actually was not related to divorce specifically, the part that was a lot. So, you know, they're fun watches and you can get through them really quickly. And I think we're going to try. I'm saying try. Big try here, right? Because some busy months coming up. But we're going to try to have Dr. Cha out close to when this episode, when the intro episode comes out. And then Strangers Again and Let's Get Divorced will probably be in the next month.
Yeah, that's the goal.
All right, so I guess we can wrap up our introduction here, unless there was anything else you wanted to mention before we close out.
Yeah, sort of as we were, not to get back into analysis about when we're ending, but something else I was thinking about is this sort of, maybe part of why divorce comedies are existing more in this context, is that there are, I've run into a lot more Korean dramas that are about women and female characters, particularly in their like early 30s, late 20s, who are at this later stage of life. Not that like being in your 30s is that late a stage of life, but about people who aren't like in their early 20s and like starting out. Yeah, people who are like full adults and have been adults for a while. And maybe once you start telling these stories about these women and characters who aren't like brand new, part of the picture then becomes people who are divorced and then stories about divorce.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense because I know I have to like balance my stories that are about high schoolers with my stories that are about grown people, right? Mm-hmm. And one that we watched a while ago was Be Melodramatic, another K-drama that was about women who were in their 30s. And one of the main characters had a kid, was divorced, right? It's not a divorce comedy because it was not centered around her divorce, but thinking about where they were at this particular stage of their life and what it means to have dreams as a person in your 30s, you know, the fact that she was divorced was part of that conversation and what it meant for her going forward. So I think that's an excellent point that when you start focusing on stories of older people, right?
Yeah, either in their 30s or like in the case of like a lot of these characters, like they're in their like mid-30s or their 40s, like they're middle-aged women and they're still, I mean, the men are, men always get told stories, we always tell stories about men no matter what age they are, but we sometimes overlook middle-aged women as people who still lives.
I'm gonna have to stop you there.
Okay,
let's not call women who are in their mid-30s middle-aged. I don't like that. Let's not do that. Okay
fair. But women who are, let's say, older than their 20s still deserve to have stories told about them.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. That is very true. I just quibble with middle age. That's all. You just hurt my feelings a little bit. That's all.
Where does middle age start then?
60. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I guess technically you're right, but I hate thinking about it that way.
Okay, fair.
Because I guess, not that this matters, but when I think middle age, I think like I don't know, like my parents, but when I was old enough to recognize that they were like old, not when I was like five and they were still hot young things, you know what I mean? But like, I don't know. I don't feel middle-aged. And when you said that, it makes me realize that I am. And that hurts my feelings.
Okay, well, I did not mean to turn this into Attack Ayani hour, but...
It wasn't on purpose. It's okay. I forgive you.
Anyway, enjoy our mini-series. We hope you tune in.
In order to tune in to our upcoming episodes, make sure you follow us on Instagram and Threads, I guess, at Sex Love Lit, and on Tumblr at Sex Love Lit Podcast, so you can know when our episodes are coming out. Or you can just follow us on all of your favorite podcast platforms, so you'll get alerts as soon as our episodes come out. It's actually kind of nice. It's funny. Apple will alert me when there's new SLL episodes, like I wasn't up the night before getting them ready to go. So if you want SLL alerts, you know what to do. Just follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you like to listen to your podcasts.
Yeah, and if you have any divorce comedies you think we should check out, let us know that too, because it turns out we like them.
And on that note, this has been the intro episode to our mini series on divorce comedies. We'll see you next time.
All right, bye.